Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, filling in for Steve Jones, here's Kevin Herr.
More of the best of the Steve Jones Show as we're in the Sunbury Motors Studio East. The State College version of the Sunbury Motors Studio shut down for the week as Steve takes a little R&R. He'll be back with us on Monday to get into full swing for football season, both college, high school, and NFL. And of course, there's a game this weekend that might be of interest to a few fans, at least for the first quarter anyway. How much of the preseason games will you end up watching this year? I mean, the first couple of games, to me, it's the first quarter, first half at best, and then it's kind of, you know, watching guys that may or may not make the team. I guess it depends on how interested you are in your team, whether you're going to watch the third and fourth quarter. Game three, though, the preseason, that's the one I think you watch the biggest part of, because those are going to be the that's going to be the game that makes or breaks it for a lot of these guys. Well, listen, let's talk a little college football with Adam Rittenberg of ESPN.com on the Steve Jones Show on WKOK.
Adam Rittenberg, ESPN.com, joins us. Adam, welcome back. It is great to have you on the show.
Great to be with you, Steve.
All right. Adam, what were your thoughts in this logjam about this particular move that Urban apparently is going to make with Braxton Miller?
I thought it was always a possibility. You know, of the three, you know, Braxton is the best athlete. You know, he's a guy that would, I think, most easily transition to another position. And I think the bigger thing that was missed in all of this, Steve, especially when it happened, that's a pretty severe injury. It's a labrum tear. It was really his second surgery on that shoulder because of a labrum issue. And that typically takes a full year recovery at minimum, oftentimes more than a year. That's why I thought he was never a realistic candidate to start or to play quarterback at another school this year, even though, you know, the transfer rumors were rampant in the spring. And, you know, ultimately, that's what's preventing him from playing quarterback at Ohio State. His shoulder just isn't ready, which was always a possibility given this injury, which I think was sort of glossed over at the time. So I think this is definitely the best decision for Braxton Miller, both short-term and long-term, because most you talk to around the sport and in the NFL, it didn't feel like he projected necessarily as a quarterback at the next level. And then for Ohio State, it clears up part of the quarterback situation, and it provides another weapon at a different spot on offense. He's going to have to learn the position. There's nuances he's going to have to pick up to being an H-back, to being a wide receiver. But the one thing we know Braxton Miller can do, maybe better than anyone in the country, is break off those long runs in open space. So, you know, Urban Meyer now can get even more creative with how he does that, and I think this should benefit Ohio State in certainly the short term as it figures out ultimately who ends up playing quarterback there.
Yeah, very good point about the creativity it gives them. Joe Paterno always had a saying here when it came to players late in their careers that he'd like to, in their senior year, move them to a position where he thought they had the best chance to make it at the next level. You alluded to that. Could that give Miller a better chance at making it the next level because he can show what he can do at the spot?
Sure. I think ultimately he was going to get looked at a position other than quarterback. Next year next spring, I should say, when he's preparing for the NFL and the draft and so forth, I think he would have been evaluated in some type of role like this as a wide receiver, H-back, maybe even as a returner. A role that we'll see how much he actually handles those punt returns for Ohio State. But I do think it's best for him, you know, as far as his future, you know, especially because now he's had a couple of shoulder injuries, and that was always a bit of a question, you know, the arm and everything that goes into playing a quarterback, at the college level and definitely at the next level. So I think this is, in some ways a blessing in disguise, although I know Braxton would have loved to have continued to play quarterback, and he was a great quarterback. Let's not forget, this guy won 7 individual awards as a quarterback. He led Ohio State to a perfect season in 2012. I was speaking to a Big Ten coach the other day who noted how impressive he was in 2013 when Ohio State had a very mediocre defense, being able to lead them to an undefeated regular season before they fell in the Big Ten title game. So it wasn't like Braxton Miller was some mediocre quarterback, but I think ultimately this is the best move for Ohio State because of what they learned about their other two quarterbacks last season.
beyond now this, with Big Ten Media Days coming up, are there a couple of questions in your mind going in that'll be of interest to you to see how people react?
Well, you know, I think Jim Harbaugh will be a story no matter what he says and does during those couple of days in Chicago. Ohio State, you know, the assumed number one team in the country going into the year, you know, what they're going to be saying. And now, you know, the quarterback situation is still interesting, not quite as interesting with two as it was with three, but you know, that'll be certainly a topic. You have some new coaches in the league in Paul Christ and in Mike Riley. You're a little disappointed, Steve, honestly, in the player contingent. Not a lot of star players, aside right. from Michigan State's Connor Cook and Shalique Calhoun. I think the Big Ten kind of misses the mark on some of that. This is an opportunity to promote a player like Christian Hackenberg and even some of the Ohio State stars that are staying home, Joey Bosa and Ezekiel Elliott, I can think of. But still, you know, a lot of star power among the coaches. And it's really a chance to for the Big Ten to puff out its chest a little bit for the first time in seemingly a generation, because you have a national champion in Ohio State, you have some excitement at Michigan, and you have coming off of a good bowl season for the first time in a while. So it'll be interesting to see what the mood is in Chicago, but I guarantee it'll be a better mood than it has been the last few years.
I know whenever you have brought up the subject of the television contract with Jim Delaney, he's always alluded to the fact with you, Adam, that it's, he thinks about it basically 24/7. And you've mentioned that before to us. What importance do you think Jim might put on the Utah-Michigan game, because it's on Fox Sports 1 on September 3rd, with it being Jim's opener as well?
As far as the contract, or just as far as the important game?
Yeah, as far as, like, how well does it draw? What kind of rating does it get? Does it, you know, would it show that the Big Ten could have drawing power in something other than the ESPN?
Well, yeah, I'm sure he'll be monitoring the ratings as he does for every game. But I think he has a pretty good idea of what Michigan will do no matter where it plays and what channel it's on.
Right.
So I think that's you know, something he'll look at. I don't think this is going to be a deal ultimately, Steve, that's exclusive to one network. I don't think that's how Jim operates. I think he recognizes that there's benefits to having more of a, you know, spreading out, you know, and having more of a presence on multiple networks. So that's just my guess. From, you know, I obviously have talked to people at ESPN and around the sport as far as their takes on what it's going to be. But I don't think this is going to be just a Fox deal or just an ESPN deal. Right. Or just an NBC type deal. I think it's going to be spread out, but I think the distribution of who gets what games, that's going to be fascinating to see if that ends up changing. If some of the, you know, stronger games are maybe farmed out to different networks than they are right now in the current deal.
As an addendum to Adam's point, remember the Big Ten football championship game is on Fox, and the Big Ten semifinals and finals in basketball are on CBS. So there's always been multiple platforms of what Jim has done. Penn State, it's been 3 years since the sanctions were handed down. As you have watched this from your seat and how it's played out here over the last 3 years, what has struck you about the Penn State football program as they've gone through 3 years to get to this point?
Well, they've definitely exceeded the expectations that were coming out in Indianapolis on that really tough day for Penn State. I mean, it was, you know, 10 years of irrelevancy. It was more crippling than a death penalty sanction would have been for Penn State football. I mean, they've had three, you know, pretty good seasons, and I think they're poised for an even better one this year, and they're getting closer to being whole from a scholarship standpoint. So I think the, you know, period where Penn State, you know, wouldn't be competing for championships, where it wouldn't be an elite program maybe on the field or on the recruiting trail, has been shortened. And obviously Bill O'Brien deserves a ton of credit for that, and his staff and those players for performing the way they did and keeping things steady. And then I think you're seeing James Franklin and his staff, you know, have a chance to elevate even further. But I will say that, you know, that happened during a time where the Big Ten has been you know, relatively weak conference. I think that's starting to change, especially in that division with the rise of Michigan State, with Michigan seemingly on the right track with under Jim Harbaugh, you know, with Ohio State, you know, now coming off a national title and not slowing down and recruiting and having a great chance to repeat as a champion. So the things are getting tougher for Penn State, but the good news is Penn State's in a better position to handle those tough circumstances.
Was there anything about this three-year period for Penn State that actually didn't surprise you?
Oh, that didn't surprise me. That's a good question. I would say the loyalty that the players had for the program and the way that they were able to kind of separate everything that happened from their feelings about, you know, putting on that helmet, putting on that uniform. Penn State, as I had a chance to visit, you know, is a place that really resonates with people who have gone there, even non-athletes. And that part of it, you know, obviously was encouraging to see, despite all the turmoil that what they went through, especially during those first few months after the sanction.
And for those who don't realize, Adam does get in here. He does not, you know, and he gets in there and he gets inside here and he gets a chance to talk to people. He does that at many places. He doesn't just sit in an office and write stories. That's why he can talk about such things, because he's actually on site. Now, the next part of this, when I came time for me to vote for the preseason teams, the East, I had to make decisions about, okay, him. Okay, wait a minute, not him. Okay, wait a minute. I can only pick five. In the West, I struggled. Is that a perception of strength and weakness, how do you see the West?
Absolutely. I mean, I also voted on those teams for the first time. I mean, I covered the league only for 7 or 8 years, and they decided to finally give me a all big vote. But no, I mean, literally the list was half as long on the West side as opposed to the East side. In the East, you could have put five Ohio State players. You could have put, you know, three or four Penn State players and Michigan State players.
Yep.
All, you know, you really could have fielded a team of 10 exclusively from the East division. And that's just a combination of things. So Wisconsin, you lost several star players, most notably Melvin Gordon at running back. You look at Nebraska; they're going through some transition. And Minnesota has been a program that certainly made strides under Jerry Kill, but hasn't had too many bona fide star players. Although I think they have a chance to this season. So I do think it speaks to the strength of the East, you know, from a team standpoint, but also from a star power standpoint. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't going to be great players coming out of the West. I think Corey Clement at Wisconsin looks to me like the next great Wisconsin running back, following the footsteps of Melvin Gordon. You know, I think there's some defensive backs at Minnesota, Grand Body Calhoun, and Eric Murray. Both have All Big Ten potential, maybe All America potential. Nebraska's got a defensive lineman in Malik Collins, who I think could have a huge national awards type year if certain things work out for him. So there are some players on that side, but it does not compare, at least right now, to what the East is bringing back.
What is it about your job in covering this that energizes you on a weekly basis, on a seasonal basis?
I get excited just about the kind of unknowns. And, you know, we think it's going to be this way, and then it turns out to be something completely different. And you saw that really play out with the playoff. I mean, who would have thought we would have been talking about TCU at the end of the year? I mean, they were a 4-8 team that looked lost in the Big 12. We knew Gary Patterson was a good coach, but how are they ever going to compete in that league? And all of a sudden, you know, now they're looked at as probably the number two team in the country entering the year. So I think the element of surprise in college football is exciting. We have this playoff, which creates even more excitement. The offseason's too long. I can't wait for it to get here. I'm excited that there's some news that's popping up this week. You know, news that's not just the off-field stuff, which no one wants to see, but the actual football news as we get closer, and we're hearing coaches talk, and we're going to get practices going here pretty soon. So I love the season. I love the plot twists and the surprises along the way, and just can't wait for it to get here.
Adam, it's always a pleasure. Thanks a lot for carving out some time. I always enjoy the conversation.
Likewise. Thanks, Steve. I'll see you soon.
Adam Rittenberg, ESPN.com. Back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Welcome back to the Steve Jones Show in the Sunbury Motors Studio East. It's Kevin Herr filling in for the vacationing Steve Jones. We talked about some high school football rule changes last hour. How about some college basketball rule changes, where the head coach of the Nittany Lions, Patrick Chambers. He joined Steve earlier in the year here on the Steve Jones Show to talk about those changes.
Penn State's one of the top 10 in the country in coaches versus cancer earnings over the years that spread out across the area over the $2 million mark. What did that mean to you when you finally heard that they cleared that barrier?
You know, we just took the torch from what Bruce and Ed and Jerry had started, and Steve Greer, and now Al and Kent. I mean, these and the volunteers, everybody, and the sponsors, of course, have done such a great job of making this an elite event, the can't miss event of the year. And for us to raise awareness and funds is critical, because obviously, you know, cancer has touched all of us. You know, I don't run across anybody who it hasn't affected in some sort of way. For me, my brother last year around this time, lost his life to cancer. And we have two people in our family now, in our Penn State basketball family, that are battling as we speak. And Kathy Drysdale in the marketing department and Mitch Stover, our equipment manager.
Yeah.
And as you watch those two go through it, it's an inspiration. I admire them, how they're handling it. But it just makes you want to fight that much harder to make next week's event the biggest and the best it can be.
Absolutely. And it's a first-class event start to finish, which is one of the prerequisites for you being involved in it. All right. Some news and notes for you. The Basketball Rules Committee has gone over the first hurdle, and then there'll be one more step to take next month to make rules permanent. Shot clock, arc, reducing a timeout in the second half for coaches, 10-second rule, 5-second closely guarded, combination of timeout with immediate timeout if it's within 30 seconds of the mark. What are your thoughts on all of those rules?
Wow, Steve. Let's just dive into 30 seconds.
You wanted 24.
I did, and you knew that. Yep. We talked about that on our radio show together. I thought 24 because NBA is 24, internationally it's 24. I just, why not make it across the board and make it more uniform? Although, you know, everybody's like, well, how's it going to help the game? It's going to be poor shooting. It's going to be this. The speed of the game is going to be faster. There's going to be how many more possessions? You know, who knows at this point? It could be 10. It could be 12. Could be 15. I haven't done the analytics on it yet or seen any analytics on it yet. But obviously the game's going to pick up a little bit. The timeout, I get it. Too many stoppages for our team. I think we needed that timeout. However, I understand you want to keep the flow of the game at a better pace and keep it moving along.
Can I ask you, though, about the part where the coach can't call the timeout? How concerning is that to you?
It is concerning, but, you know, we're going to have some seniors out there, hopefully, who'll be smart enough to call their own timeout.
Right.
And you know what? Things that we're going to have to work in practice.
Yeah.
I can't call the timeout. You're going to have to get this done in this situation. Do a little bit more basketball one-on-one on situations that you might want to call a timeout, during the course of a game because I'm not permitted to do it. I think the arc.
Right.
You know, they're looking for less collisions. They're looking, you know, maybe minimize the block charge. I think that's going to help us. I think that helps the offense more. I don't think we took as many charges as we normally do in my prior years.
Not even close.
I think because we've developed into a great shot blocking team with Jordan Dickerson, Donovan Jack, and Brandon Taylor.
Yep.
I mean, what do we have that one game against Nebraska?
Yeah, 16.
I mean, 16. So I don't think that's going to affect us completely, but hopefully it helps us when we're driving to the basket.
A 5-second closely guarded. I never liked it, Patrick, to be frank with you, because I thought there's a shot clock. I don't need to watch a guy count and then take the count off and then restart the count. So it's one less thing to me for the official to do.
I think that helps the officials more than anything. We don't extend out anyway.
Right.
I don't think any coach wants their point guard to pound the ball 27 times. So, I mean, I think it helps the officials. I think teams are still going to pressure the ball because you want to distract and disrupt their offense and get them out of rhythm to maybe create deflections and turnovers. I don't think it's a major deal there.
Okay, and then official can go and check shot clock like the Nigel Hayes play in the national championship game. They couldn't check it in that game. They'll be able to check it any time now. Your thoughts on that?
Whatever we can do, again, to get it right, I think we need to do in that situation. We should throw out the rule book and say, look, this is a critical point. We need to do this. Again, I think it's all for the better of the game. And if we do it at a timeout or obviously under 2 minutes, you can look at deflections. And now this, I think you got to do it. I think it can only help the outcome. So you're getting it correct.
Patrick Chambers of the Penn State Nittany Lions talking about some of the basketball rule changes in college basketball coming up this year. In the next half hour, it is a conversation with Jack Hamm talking about no names on the jerseys and Penn State football in general. Stick around for that. That's coming up after the news here on the Steve Jones Show from the Sunbury Motors Studio East. It's Kevin Herr filling in for the vacationing Steve Jones. Check out Sunbury Motors with the Ford, Lincoln, and Hyundai dealerships in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza in Sunbury. Kia. Folks at Kia are available on Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great deals going on right now in the 2015s. 2016s are on the lot as well. Check it out. Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Best of the Steve Jones Show continues after the news with Jack Hamm on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
This year marks Sunbury Motor Company's 100th year in business, and we will be keeping the same tried and true values we've had ever since we opened our doors, guaranteeing your car buying experience will be smooth and hassle-free. No spinning a wheel for specials you don't need or want. No pushy sales staff pouncing on you as soon as you arrive. No sideshow yelling. Since we began back in 1915, we have strived to be your most trusted friend when it comes to all of your new car needs, whether that's in sales or service. We strive to offer you as many viable options as we possibly can. Sunbury Motor Company always carries a line of few other auto dealers in our area can compete with our inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles. There should be no problems with finding the right vehicle to fit your needs. Our friendly and trustworthy staff is knowledgeable in all of our products and stand ready to answer all of your questions and meet all of your needs. In honor of 100 years in business, SMC is introducing the all-new Auto Club, where Sunbury Motors will pay you for every mile you drive. Be sure to ask us about our Auto Club benefits. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and at sunburymotors.com. Proudly owned by the Mertz family since 1915.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, filling in for Steve Jones, here's Kevin Herr.
Final half hour, the best of the Steve Jones Show in the Sunbury Motors Studio East today as Steve continues his R&R. Tomorrow, we'll remember the late Fran Fischer in our Best of the Steve Jones Show. And if you missed any of these best ofs, make sure you check out the podcast at stevejonesshow.com. As a matter of fact, you can listen to any of our shows from the stevejonesshow.com podcast link. Available there. Follow us on Facebook too, Steve Jones Show on Facebook, and at Steve Jones PSU on Twitter. Steve caught up with Jack Hamm, his broadcast partner and NFL Hall of Famer, talked about the changes at Penn State with the uniform and more Penn State football in general. It is the Best of the Steve Jones Show with Jack Hamm on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
All right, well, we've defied the odds, Jack. We're in our 16th year together. Welcome. It's great to have you with us.
I love your term, defy the odds. I can't believe it's year 16, Steve. It's gone by very quickly.
Yeah, it sure has. James Franklin called you last week and asked you to come to State College, and you immediately did so. What about the savvy that he has of listening to the fans, listening to the fan base, and to do some of the things he's been able to do, like the jerseys?
Well, you talk about a head coach having a feel for it, you know, and he seems to have the feel of, or the pulse of, you know, the fans, the football team, you know, it's just something that, you know, I don't think you can learn that. I think I just think it's in his DNA, and yeah, you're without question. He said, 7 o'clock in the morning meeting up at his office, and I said yes, I would be there. I didn't really know what it was all about, and then he explained to me and a number of the other lettermen there about taking the names off the jerseys, and I think it was right when O'Brien put the names on, and I think the timing is absolutely perfect about today. You know, making that's a great tradition Penn State has had over the years, and it makes Penn State just a little bit unique in this cookie cutter type world. It's good that we get back to that tradition where football is about the team and the name on the front of the jersey, and not an individual thing. And I think the players responded to that, and I think they're excited about it as well.
When you talk to the other lettermen, they share that excitement, the fact that it was a return to a tradition.
It they did. I mean, I think to a man that we're like I said, I think all of us were more excited, and I think just trying to explain to the players what this meant. I mean, it's very special at Penn State. We're just a little bit different, and we take pride in the fact of it's a team game, it's a team sport out there, and the individuals is just part of it, and I think that's a great thing about football is when you can. Individuals can lose themselves into one common goal about winning games and winning championships. I think it's a very special feeling, and I've enjoyed it throughout my college and pro career, and we just try to convey that to the players.
Now the football team will be convening here in just 2 weeks to then get ready for the upcoming season. When you look back, Jack, defensively at what they did last year, what they did, let's start with what they did against the run. Give the fans an idea of what it means when a team can stop someone against the run.
Well, I think in defense, you want to make an offense, and in college football especially, it's so wide open here right now, but you want to make an offense one-dimensional. And I think if you look back and when you look at championship teams, and look at Ohio State, the way they were able to run the table, I mean, they had an offensive line that got better and better each week. They had one of the most outstanding running backs, and you and I both liked this kid from day one, 220 pounds, and behind that line and his power and speed running game that he has, it really puts a defense off balance. So if you defensively can eliminate the running game from an offense, I mean, that's the physical part of it, and that's the physical part of football. You can take that away from it, and then you can do a lot of things. You may want to play nickel on first or second down because you can hold up against the running game, and you're not concerned about it. So, you win championships, I think, with making an offense one-dimensional and shutting down a running game. If you can't do that, I mean, and that team gets balanced in their offense and they're running the football and play action off of that, then you're in for a long afternoon. So, yeah, the quality teams out there do a great job of making sure they stop the run.
The next part, Jack, is a pro quarterback's out there working all the time, and false pre-reads can send them into a play that that ends up being a disaster for them. When you can give false pre-reads on this level, how much trouble can you give a college quarterback?
You can give a college quarterback nightmares in that situation. And even last year, Bob Shipp did a good job of making sure. You didn't get into it too early. There's a lot of movement on defense before the snap of the football, and that's when that quarterback's trying to look, especially down at the safeties, and trying to get any kind of a pre-read he can on a coverage. But Penn State defense did a great job of being patient and getting into, if it ended up being a blitz, almost like a rolling blitz in the sense the linebackers got his momentum almost timed up with the quarterback's cadence in a sense, not showing your coverages to that quarterback and being patient and until the last second is a big part of making that sure that quarterback is confused back in the pocket and he's dropping back and he's not sure what that coverage is out there. So that's a key thing. I mean, it drives pro quarterbacks crazy if you can do that, and that it's a big advantage when you can disguise coverages that well.
You just mentioned the word patience. Whether it's offense, a quarterback, a running back, a wideout, or a defensive player, what does it take at any level to develop patience in this game, and how important is it, Jack?
Oh, it's I don't think people talk about how important patience is. Your defensive line, you jump into a gap at the last second, right before an offensive line has already made, they've already made their calls. They made their calls and how they're going to slide a protection. And at the last second, you may have Zettel or Johnson or whomever drop down into a gap right before the snap of the football. Those are the things that's from playing the game. And now we've got guys with a lot of experience, obviously, on the defensive side of the ball. And at the last second for a defensive lineman, that's a patience he needs. Or the linebacker on the edge who's going to blitz off the edge, not showing it until the last second. And sometimes the quarterback doesn't even see him. And also the running back can't get out to pick him up. So all those things. And then in the secondary, which I think Penn State will have an outstanding one this year, is those safeties got to make sure they give bad pre-reads to a quarterback. So, yeah, have patience. Keep your poise until the last second. And normally you get into that when after maybe a couple of series where you get the feel of the cadence of a quarterback, that's where a veteran defense can really take advantage of a young quarterback.
Linebacker play important. I remember when we went to practice, it was before the 2013 season, and you and I lamented at the lack of depth because sanctions are not an excuse. Sanctions are a reality.
Right.
And you and I, I'm sick of hearing, the excuses. No, there's a difference between an excuse and reality. And you and I looked at the numbers at linebacker, and we said to each other, they have to all stay healthy. Now they had more depth at linebacker, but let's take the guys up front. What does it mean to linebackers when you have a Zettel and a Johnson in front of you to set you up?
Oh, I'll tell you, Steve, my college days, I played behind Mike Reed and Steve Smear, and my pro days were behind Joe Green. So I know about quality defensive linemen. And when you have guys like Zettel and Johnson up front that can just, they're playing across the line of scrimmage with that offensive line, and you get that push up in the middle, that's where your linebackers can feel going forward towards the line of scrimmage, and you're not going laterally making a tackle for a 3, 4, or 5 yard gain downfield. Those guys, in all honesty, you're as good a linebacker out there as the front four you have in front of you, and it can make your play a whole lot easier with that kind of a quality group. And having a push like that with these guys, and not just the starter, there's a lot of depth at that defensive line. And getting, there would be a lot of rotation in the third and fourth quarters of the games with all the plays they have out there. But with that kind of a quality in the defensive line, where the linebackers can make a lot of plays right at the line of scrimmage, and that's exactly what you want your linebackers to make tackles. And like I said, not laterally 3 or 4 or 5 yards downfield.
Last year when Penn State was going into training camp, they had two guys that had played offensive line, Donovan Smith, who had started, and Angelo Mangiero. This year they'll go into camp with at least 7 guys that have had game speed. How valuable is game speed to the development of a player?
I think it's huge for the offensive line, much more so than probably any other position out there. I mean, you have got to have a group playing together, and that's what they're going to have the experience from last year. And no question about it, it was a tough year for the offensive line to try to get any kind of cohesion out there. But, getting that experience and, getting beat up, quite a bit as well, I think it bodes well. And now those guys have come back bigger, stronger, with a little more experience. They know how to play the game and at what level they have to play to get a running game going. And, boy, I'll tell you what, it can make this football team just get, a bigger push on third down and short yardage situations where you keep the football late in the game in the fourth quarter. You keep drives alive where you keep your defense fresh. It's going to be critical for this offensive line, I think, to play well. But in that experience from last year and coming back now, and not that I'm thinking this is going to be Anthony Munoz out there and a whole bunch of all pros,
right,
but I think it's an offensive line that will be playing much better. And with that, I think you'll see this offense really get back to where they were maybe 2 years ago.
Let's get that the running back part. Running the football is one thing. I know there are a lot of things about Keel Lynch that we like. There are a lot of things about Mark Allen and Nick Scott we like. But at the same time, what can a running back in the pass game mean? As much as we love the ability to throw the ball downfield by any quarterback and the excitement it brings to it. What can a running back mean in the pass game?
Well, in a pass game, and if Penn State gets into third and fours and third and five situations, a lot of times that best corner is going to be on Penn State's best wide receiver. That may be a matchup on Hamilton. We'll see how, and Penn State has a number of great wideouts coming back this year with a lot of experience as well. But the mismatch you're going to get a lot of times is going to be that line outside linebacker matched up on a guy like Akil Lynch coming out of the backfield, or Allen, or whoever it may be, who understands how to run routes, how to get squared up on a linebacker where you have a two-way go. A lot of times if you do that and they clear out the middle, you beat a linebacker in the middle of the field, there's a lot of running room. If Hackenberg gets the football to him, it's an easy throw as well, right down the middle. Those are matchups that are going to be, I think, a big mismatch situation in favor of Penn State, because those running backs now should be able to understand the passing game over there, and Hackenberg knows where he can go to his back out of the backfield, and that can be a mismatch against a linebacker that our running back should beat almost every time. So, you're going to have nickel packages sometime, and if it's a safety, you got a 220-pound guy like Akil Lynch, and he'd be more physical against a safety who doesn't handle playing man-to-man on a back out of the backfield. That's something the safeties are real comfortable doing as well, so it could be a mismatch on the physical side the other way. So I think our running backs this year especially, I think, would have an opportunity to be much more involved in the passing game and even in motion. When we motion them out of the backfield, we'll see whether a linebacker goes out there with a guy like Akil Lynch and or Allen.
If I were to rack up a tape of Le'Veon Bell, would that be a good example for any running back?
Well, Le'Veon Bell ran a post pattern out of the backfield. He went in motion, then he ran. You don't normally do that. Normally, it's a check down or it's a swing out of the backfield. And the play, he got hurt and was out for the playoffs, which is a big loss for Pittsburgh here. The post pattern downfield. He is about as good running the routes out of the backfield, and made a big year for Roethlisberger percentage wise, because you're dumping it off to a guy. And like I said, it's an easy throw for the quarterback, right. And I can see Hackenberg going a lot to his backs out of the backfield. And then you have to creep up defensively. And you guys are catching the ball out of the backfield, making somebody miss, and you're gaining 10, 15 yards downfield. Then you creep up, and then you go to your wideouts downfield as well. So I think it's with the weapons we have at the wideout position, and now with the skill set at the running back who can't come out of the backfield, this offense should be a whole lot better this year.
As you know, there are a number of things I keep on one of those charts somewhere. I mean, you and I don't have a lot of stuff in front of us. I mean, we really don't. We're just kind of
because we can't remember a lot.
I think that's an age thing. But one of them I have on there, I always make sure is I keep track of, and I rarely use it because it sometimes doesn't come into play, is the field position part. Last year, Penn State, in games that they won, the seven that they won, they were plus 3 yards per possession in field position. In the games they lost, the six losses, they were minus 9 yards per possession. That brings up special teams in the kicking game. What kind of growth does Penn State need to see there, Jack, to make it a better season?
Well, I think, again, when now you have more scholarship players out there than we have had in the past. And it seems like, Steve, in the 16 years, we've been waiting for our kickoff return man to come out and do a great job. I think Larry Johnson was the last guy I could remember who really did a great job on kickoff returns for us, because he was 225 pounds back there and ran through a lot of arm tackles.
And he had a feel.
And you practice that in spring practice. You practice in preseason camp. But I'm not sure, you're right. You have to have a sense and a feel when to hit it, when to time it up with your blockers up front. And it seems like for a number of years right now, there's been that disconnect in a sense on a kickoff returns. And, you don't want to, when an offense struggling last year, like Penn State's offense struggled, you don't want to be starting, a lot of your possessions inside the 20-yard line a lot of times. And other times we end up getting penalties and pushed back as well. And so that's got to be this year a an emphasis for Franklin to get that kickoff return and those plus yards upfield, positive yards on kickoff return to give Hackenberg and the offense really good field position, because you can be a little more aggressive now if you got the ball out beyond this 30-yard line or thereabouts, and then there's a lot more things you're comfortable running out of your offense when you're out there, and so kickoff return is going to be huge. But you're right. We've got to find that one guy who's got that feel for it, and I think it's something that's got to be in their DNA. I'm not sure it's a coachable thing.
All right, exactly. Well, for some odd reason, this is always easy.
I think we enjoy talking Penn State football, Steve.
I think we do. This is how we talk on the phone.
Exactly right.
Hey, partner, always great. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, Steve.
All right, thanks. Jack Hamm, my broadcast partner, 16 years. I've had what I think are five major breaks in my career. Five major breaks. And the first one was getting the football job, because it was a life changer. The second one was getting paired up with him, because you always want to work. I have always strongly felt that you always should try to work with somebody that can make you better. You can argue about how good you think I am. It's subjective. But I can tell you from my personal point of view where I sit, I know I'm exponentially better as a football announcer because I work with Jack. Probably the third one would be working with Dick Girardi. Again, you can argue about how good you think I am as a basketball broadcaster. I know I'm exponentially better as a basketball broadcaster the day I started working with Dick. And then the other two major breaks would be early in my career. You know, I had great mentors in Gil Santos, John Grant, Fran Fischer, great mentors. But having the ability to work with Gil, you know, not just listen to him, but work with him, allowed me to learn from somebody where I picked up so much from by discussion and by example. And the fifth one, believe it or not, is this. Doing this show. This is a huge break for me in what I'm doing. And being paired with Kevin. And that has been as much fun as we have. You know, Mr. Vacation and I have just enjoyed, you know, in now our fourth year of doing that. And it has been the greatest local radio experience of my life. So I've been very lucky, but you know, it started back, you know, like I said, breaks one and two deal with our previous guest.
The legendary Hall of Famer Jack Hamm and Steve Jones broadcast partner. I'll tell you what one thing that about Jack Hamm that always amazes me is how down to earth he truly is. I mean, he's not afraid to sign things when he's doing the tailgate show at Penn State or wherever he is. Just an out and out great guy to have a conversation with as well, whether it's football or some of his other endeavors. Steve Jones Show and the best of the Steve Jones Show will continue tomorrow. We'll look back on the legendary broadcaster Fran Fischer's life, and we'll remember him. We'll have conversations with Steve, and we'll have some memories of Fran Fischer. That's all coming up tomorrow on a very special Best of the Steve Jones Show here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. You can find it online at WKOK.com and all of our best ofs and all of our programs at podcast at SteveJonesShow.com. Talk to you tomorrow.